just a heads up, I have my dog with us.
Oh, good. We like dogs. We're dog friendly.
Well, she's a loud German Shepherd, so she's at my feet under this desk. So hopefully that means she's quiet, but please don't be alarmed if you hear. If she sees a squirrel or an intruder, she'll go wild.
She'll bark.
My dog joined a number of podcasts in the past. when my dining room was actually my recording studio. Oh. It's only in this season that I have my dining room back. So for four seasons, my dining room was the recording studio, and that's all we used the dining room for. So it's kind of, it's a return to normal after the pandemic. It's a nice table. I hadn't seen it for a really long time. Welcome to Coming of Age, the podcast that is changing the conversation about aging and reimagining the future of care. In this conversation, I'm joined by the VP of Long-Term Care, Community and Hospice at Kensington Health, Andrea Thompson. A values-based, purpose-driven leader throughout her career, Andrea has held several operations and quality improvement roles across healthcare settings, including long-term care, acute care, rehabilitation, complex continuing care, and community-based services. In this episode, we're exploring how long-term care is evolving to support increasingly complex care needs. People moving into long-term care are currently living with nearly six different health conditions on average. 87% of individuals need support with activities of daily living, like getting dressed, taking a shower, and eating. So, what does complex continuing care look like in practice? How are homes adapting clinically and culturally to these shifts? And what promising models are emerging that we should invest in? Also joining us for this conversation is Lucia Rocha, president of the Family Council at the Gardens at Kensington Health. As a former caregiver, Lucia knows firsthand what it's like to support a loved one as their care needs change over time. A big thank you to our sector champion, StaffStat, for generously sponsoring this episode. Let's dive in.
What Lucia didn't tell you is every spring, she donates bagfuls of sweetbread to the people who live at the gardens. It's one of the most thoughtful things we have around Easter time.
Oh, how wonderful. How generous.
Yeah, we have a bakery that's a special Portuguese bread, and they do individual breaks because we got for all the staff, for most of the staff and for the residents, and they enjoy that. Even Portuguese and non-Portuguese, everybody enjoys the type of bread. So it's a pleasure to see them enjoying that for the breakfast and everything. So yeah, we do that for Easter.
That really is thoughtful, and it really does speak to how you fit into the community, but also I think the diversity of being in downtown Toronto as well. Today, we really want to explore the evolving world of what is long-term care, but more importantly, it's about the people in long-term care. And, you know, we have the privilege of two leaders, one with lived experience as a family caregiver and the evolving experience that you've had, Lucia, and Andrea, you from your clinical expertise. And for the benefit of our listeners, Andrea has worked across the healthcare system. She brings deep, deep expertise. She's a really strong values-based leader. Andrea, I'm really privileged to have you join us with your depth of experience today. We've spoken a lot over the past seasons about the reality of long-term care and aged care in Canada. We talk about stigma, and we talk about the reality of the baby boom generation and its aging, not only in Ontario and Canada, but across North America and around the world. Ontario is very special, I have to say, in this space, in that we have such a concentration of an older population, and we have a concentration of long-term care spaces and beds. In fact, we have more than 620 long-term care homes just in the province of Ontario, and a wait list of 48,000 people. And that wait list is not going away. And we know that just by virtue of the baby boomers aging, we're putting a lot of pressure on the other parts of the healthcare system. And so I'm really curious, Andrea, from your perspective, you've worked in the different parts of the health ecosystem. You've been in long-term care now for a number of years, changing, especially what's changing in terms of who the people are that we're having to care for and how you think about actually meeting their needs, given one, the number of people who are demanding and needing services, but also what kind of services and supports they need.
Thanks, Donna. First, it's a real pleasure to be here to share our perspectives and have this really important conversation. I think when I reflect back, I think even 20 plus years ago when I was an occupational therapy student, I actually did a placement in long-term care. And when I think of who I had the opportunity to work with there, individuals had much higher functioning in their daily lives. They could do much more for themselves back when I was an occupational therapy student. And then when I fast forward and reflect to, you know, prior to 2019 and our global pandemic, at the time I was working in an acute care environment in a hospital and had the opportunity to serve people in an inpatient medicine setting. So acute medical needs for people in the area. And when I fast forward now to 2025, I think, oh my goodness, the people who would have been in hospital just 6 years ago are now moving into long-term care. And what does that say? It says that people's needs are much more complex. And so there is a challenge in front of us to serve and meet their needs. And I don't just mean their healthcare needs. I mean their social care needs. We know many people now have less social support and less family network and friends to help them through this significant transition. And I think there's a real challenge in front of us to try and catch up to meet the needs. I recently read that the majority of people who move into long-term care are coming from hospital settings. 5-10 years ago, it wasn't that way. Most people perhaps moved from their home in a community setting into long-term care. So that means people are most likely have much more complex medical, social, and activity of daily living needs.
Well, and it does speak to the cookie cutter approach doesn't necessarily work anymore. And so how are we going to make sure that we are able to respond to the diverse needs? When you think about our health human resources challenges, what sort of training and supports do we need? What kind of medical monitoring do we need? How do we support certainly a more diverse population as well, where there are cultural and considerations or linguistic considerations as well as spiritual needs as we think about the whole person? In long-term care, we've got this tension as well, where we've always spoken about long-term care as homes, and they should be about living, but yet they're also becoming far more clinically oriented spaces. And we're certainly hearing, even through some of the research that we've been doing through some polling, there is this sense of long-term care as being part of the health ecosystem. So I should be treated in a long-term care home just as I would in a hospital. So this notion that you would contribute to your rent and accommodation even is not fully understood when we think about the family members who are supporting individuals in transitioning into a long-term care home. It is transitioning into another level of housing, and it's for living, but also for making sure that all of your care needs, those biopsychosocial needs, are really being met in a far more holistic way. And, you know, I'm really curious, Lucia, from your perspective, you've been a family caregiver, and I'm sure you're seeing with your role with the Family Council, you're seeing changing needs, but also changing demands on staff and on family members. I wonder if you could first share your experience and how and when you came to Kensington Health and what you've seen change during the time that you've been involved.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here and be able to tell everyone my experience of Kensington. I came in about 20 years ago when my mom came to Kensington. Because I like to be involved and see was a new experience for me. Very hard to bring my mom because I'm the only daughter. So it was a challenge having to put her in a senior's home because that's one thing that she did not want to be involved. She always asked me not to come to a home. And then when I first came for the tour at Kensington Gardens, I knew this would be the place for her. And was lucky, I waited 2 years, but she came to the North Building. She was one of the first residents to move in. And since then, I decided that I wanted to get involved and see what I was able to help, not only my mom, but the other families over there, because I saw that a lot of residents didn't have any families. And so it was a challenge. That's why I got involved with Family Council, got involved with management, because you have to have that connection between you, the residents, the families, but very important with the management team because you have to work together. That's the only way you're going to accomplish that. And I've been very lucky the 20 years that I've been with Kensington to be able to have that connection with everyone so we can work as a team and to accomplish more. Because I've, like 5 years ago, everything was more calm in one way. Like maybe it's not the proper word calm, but I find that 15 years was okay, like the time my mom was dead. And then, but for the past 5 years, everything changed, not only with COVID, but with the residents that we have coming in because different needs, very high needs. And that's been, it's hard, even for me, that I'm not here every day like I used to, but I'm involved a lot and I speak to the families and I know the residents that we have that need so much help because now they are different needs and very high. So it's hard for our staff to be able to maintain, give all what they need because sometimes it's not the residents who have coming in. Our staff needs to work 3 times more to be able to provide the care for that resident. It's very complex. It's very hard to even to explain. Sometimes you try to explain, doesn't come the right way. So it's a challenge.
Well, I'm curious from your perspective as well, Lucia. So, you know, I've spoken about my caregiver journey with my father, and we were able to care for my father who had Alzheimer's at home until we couldn't. And the moment when we couldn't care for him actually came very quickly. And I knew the system, and yet I still felt terrible. My mother and I really struggled, and our family struggled with the need for my father to transition into a long-term care setting. His medical needs were very light, so he would have moved into a long-term care home in around 2002, and he passed away in 2004. So that was a long time ago. We didn't have to wait. It was very easy to transition him from a community care setting, and to Andrea's point, because of the wait lists, individuals are going to hospital first, then coming into long-term care. So Lucia, you mentioned that your mother didn't want to move into a long-term care home. I think none of us wants to. How do we today, and how are you through your role as the family council president, supporting other families and making sure they know it's okay, and that instead of saying, thank heavens, I didn't have to go to long-term care, or, oh no, I have to go to long-term care, that you say, thank heavens, the care is there. Because we know with 48,000 people waiting, there are a lot of people who will never access care in Ontario.
It's true. My role, what I tried to do was to explain to them that's the right thing to do is when you can't provide the proper care home for your loved one, you have to look outside of your home. That's what I did for my mom. And all the experience that I had with my mom through the years, she was that special. The first 2 years was very hard because she recognized me, who I was and everything. And she knew that's not what she wanted to be. So I had to work real hard to make her understand that's what she needed and give her the support that she needed. And also the staff that were amazing to give when I wasn't there to provide the help, the care that she needed. That's why with the help and the care she had at Kensington, she lasted for 20 years. No, she lasted for 14 years, sorry. 14 years. My mom was there for 14 years, yeah. And she passed September 26th. It was 7 years after she passed away. It's not easy. It's very hard. And even today when some of the families call me and ask me for my advice, what does she do? Because parents that want to go to a home, that have a challenge with the siblings, then I make the point of speaking to the siblings and tell them that's nothing wrong having to make that move, because it's not about the family members, it's about the care that the loved one needs. Because if you have to stay home and look after a patient with Alzheimer's like my mom had for 8 years, me and my daughter and my husband had to look after my mom, it's very draining your life. Like, since then, I never been back to the person I used to be. When you have to sleep on the floor next to your mom in the sleeping bag for a few years like I did, your life never goes back. And that's my experience, that I speak a lot on the phone. I even meet for coffee with some of the family members that are trying to make that decision. They have this challenge that, I don't want them to go to a home. I don't want them to do it. But bottom line, it's only choice you have today. Like you said, the old days, they used to go from the house, the home, the seniors' home, and it was, even, I think, was so hard for them because such a big challenge not to go from the hospital. No matter what you look, it's a big challenge and you need lots of help. I think the family member, the families need so much help and understanding what it's all about. And that's what I do my best to explain to them. That's the right thing to do, but also being there to support them, the big transition, because it is big, mental-wise.
It really does strike me that as we think about who's getting cared for in a long-term care home and supporting living in long-term care, that person-centered approach involves the family members, however you define family. I'm really curious about how at Kensington you are making that person-centered approach come to life. And Lucia was talking about having been there for more than 20 years. So Kensington's really been at the forefront of that family engagement and those family partnerships and caregiver partnerships. How are you making that come to life, perhaps in a more structured way or even more informal ways? Because I love this peer mentorship almost, Lucia. You're mentoring other family members and providing that peer support.
It's a great question. You know, first, I want to acknowledge how fortunate we are at Kensington to have a true partner in Lucia as our family council president. We can always rely on Lucia to do exactly what she's doing, which is be that liaison, be an advocate, and be a truth teller to the leadership at Kensington. And we have many deep discussions about that in the spirit of improving things for those who live at the home and whose loved ones live at the home. I agree more and more as a person's journey progresses, sometimes an individual perhaps who has dementia, the primary person you begin to interact with becomes the family, however that person has defined it. And so what I would say I'm noticing more and more is our approach in particular to communicating and engaging with family and friends who support the person living in the home needs to be personalized. I'll give you a really concrete example. Some individuals really benefit from proactive touch bases with the nurse on the unit or the associate director of care, or quite honestly, myself, because they live in British Columbia while their loved one lives in downtown Toronto. And that provides reassurance and comfort and connection. Some of the other little things we've done, and Lucia has been a real catalyst for us improving this, is regular proactive communication with those who support the people living in the home through newsletters, family council meetings where we are invited to engage in discussion and share information. We really take to heart the family survey feedback and the resident survey feedback each year. And what I've learned is you definitely can't do cookie cutter. Each person's needs are different. And just like the person who lives in the home is on a journey in their life, so is the family member and often the person who made the decision to help their loved one move into Kensington Gardens. And so it is a lot of customization because we are finding the lived experience, the background, the beliefs, the expectations that families have when their loved one moves in are highly variable. And it is changing, as Lucia said, in particular because people are coming from hospital and the infrastructure and supports, and as you mentioned, Donna, sort of the clinical orientation they've been used to, I imagine is very scary for some families, right? It can feel like a voltage drop. And so we have to help them in that transition, combined with all the feelings they may have about having made that decision with the resident who moves in and or on behalf of the resident.
We really do need to find a way to more differentiated models of care. So we've had the benefit of Lisa Raitt coming and speaking about her life experience. She's a former cabinet minister from the Government of Canada and elected official who talks about her family experience with her husband with early onset Alzheimer's and what that meant for her, but also for her kids coming into a long-term care setting where the average age of the other residents is about 82. So we're serving a far older population, but we do have younger people who are coming into our long-term care homes with different needs, whether that's acquired brain injuries or neurodegenerative disorders or mental illness and addictions. And long-term care is seen as more of a catch-all. How do we step back and make sure that we're getting those more diverse clinical supports? Because it's very difficult for us to train our frontline workforce in supporting all of these needs. I always joke when I'm talking to students or nurses in nursing school or other PSWs, there isn't a full appreciation around the clinical complexity of what you would need to support in terms of the residents living in a long-term care home when you're thinking about the fact that they all may need something different. I know that Kensington's been doing a lot of work with the University Health Network and others in the city of Toronto in really reimagining what a continuum or community of care could look like. Andrea, how is that working? Is it working? And does technology play a role in making sure that the residents actually get the supports they need without having to go and leave the long-term care home to go to hospital?
Yeah, we at Kensington Health are quite fortunate that in addition to the 350-person long-term care home, we also have a very vibrant community-based program that provides many upstream services around social care and healthcare. We have an in-residence hospice that cares for people as they approach end of life. And we have an ambulatory care platform where we provide diagnostic imaging, access to medical specialists, and lots of day surgery, such as eye surgery. And so what that has positioned us to do is to really look at the continuum, as you've said, Donna. And we are fortunate enough to be in an urban setting where we have many partners, such as the University Health Network, the Center for Addictions and Mental Health. We are the secretariat for the Midwest Toronto Ontario Health Team. And so work with dozens of community agencies, including primary care networks. And what I would say at this point is those partnerships allow us to bring the care and specialization we need into the home. So a person doesn't have to leave their home. An example might be an individual who has complex mental illness in addition to perhaps dementia. And so we partner with the geriatric mental health outreach team through UHN as an example to make sure that specialized interprofessional care comes into the home to support not only the person living with those conditions and their family, but the care team. Because you're absolutely right. What I've come to learn and really respect is the teams in long-term care are experts in providing care in a long-term care setting. But they are not acute care clinicians. They are not deep clinical experts in a particular focus area or a health condition or a system such as cardiology. And so they do need the opportunity to upskill, but they are somewhat generalists by nature. And so we need that complement of different teams to support us. What I would share is that I'm not sure we have that balance right. My observation in Ontario is we are a very hospital-centric health system. And so much of the resourcing and outreach comes from a hospital perspective, because they have the expertise, the resources, the infrastructure. And I've seen it from the hospital perspective and now the community and long-term care perspective. I'd love us to continue to shift that balance just a bit so that the people who work in long-term care and care for individuals such as Lucia's mom and others, that they are empowered to have the skills, because the clinical complexity that people are moving in with, there's a gap. And we need to start to close that gap. I feel encouraged by the government's investment in staffing and human resources over the last 3 to 4 years. I think if there is a silver lining to the pandemic, it is that it shone a light on long-term care in a way that it has in part led to additional resourcing. I don't think it's closed the gap, but I do think it's been an encouraging step forward. And I do hope that we continue to leverage things like remote monitoring, bringing things like diagnostic imaging into the home, leveraging technology to connect family members who may live across the country with their loved ones so they feel part of the community in which the resident lives. So I think we're just on the cusp of how technology can help us, because I don't think bricks and mortar, and I don't think hiring more and more care staff alone will solve it. It's going to take multiple interventions and strategies to get there.
I love your insights in terms of the focus on partnerships, and that's really been an anchor for today's discussion of the partnerships with the family, partnership with the residents, but also with those other system organizations. What I really love about Kensington, and I think it's really important for our listeners, Kensington is actually leading work. So it isn't necessarily the largest hospital in Canada, University Health Network, driving these changes. It is through, I would say, the humble but extraordinary leadership of a community-based long-term care and ambulatory care services center that is really at the heart of the community and bringing those people together. And in what I think is a very unassuming way, you're very humble, but we do like to shine a light on the fact that our long-term care homes are leaders too, and are great conveners and are great bridges. And it shouldn't always be the hospital at the heart of it. I love that you commented on how technology, you can use it for remote monitoring. There's so many opportunities to keep someone in their home, but also that linkages with the family. And Lucia, one of the things that came out of the pandemic was virtual visiting. So have you seen technology transforming how family members are engaging? Are you seeing it as a different kind of opportunity for those touch points and that connectivity with residents?
Yes, made a big difference because like I just said, we have a lot of the families that don't live in Toronto. And that's the only way they use to communicate with their families. And when I have our meetings, we provide the meetings in person and also by Zoom for the families. Like they have a way of being involved with us and know what's going on and have their opinions. So we offer both in our meetings. We meet once a month, and that's been very helpful having all the new technology now that more people is involved. Very big difference.
And Andrea, are you seeing it being used more so some remote monitoring? I know one of the other hospitals in the City of Toronto has something called a SCOPE program where you can pull together a team of diverse specialists and do a consultation with regards to how to meet more complex needs. You know, I think there are a lot of projects or programs that haven't fully been scaled to your point, and a lot of us don't know about them, and we don't know what we don't know. And how do we share the wealth and really find a way to close the gaps?
Yeah, the SCOPE program reference is a great example where the family medicine physicians who provide essentially primary care to those living in Kensington Gardens leverage the SCOPE program all the time. And so instead of, for example, having an internal medicine specialist such as a cardiologist attend the home, the family physicians have the ability through the SCOPE program to connect, have a peer-to-peer sounding board, get some specialized advice. And so, you know, I recognize being in Toronto, we are in a relatively well-resourced environment in terms of access to services and specialties. I think that the more we share and collaborate, not compete, because I think there is enough demand, to use some business language, and care to go around, the better off the people we serve will be. And so, you know, I always have deep respect for homes and organizations that are in more rural and remote areas of Ontario, because out of necessity, they are often at the forefront of innovation and creativity and that collaboration. Sometimes the problem of, I'm going to call it relative resource richness, can sometimes pose an artificial barrier to us just naturally collaborating. I think the Ontario Health Team approach is a great example of where that's happening. So as an example, we leverage our community program, known out there as the Second Mile Club at Kensington Health, to help connect people who might come in to do Tai Chi to get connected to a primary care provider. But what it also does is it lets us get to know them at Kensington Health and they get to know us. That way, if they ever progress to a place where they might need long-term care, we've demystified. They've already become part of the community in a slightly different way. And so that can help with that transition we talked about earlier. So I think we need to just keep pushing to scale the things that are working. Sometimes I think we might get stuck in analysis paralysis, to be very candid, and think that we need to call it something different or rebrand it. But really, if we think about the primary goals or our true North Star, it is about providing the best care and experience that we possibly can that is in alignment with people's wishes and how they want to live their lives. And so if we can coordinate that, and I think there's some really good examples of it happening, the pandemic was excellent for breaking down false barriers. We had no choice in the world but to collaborate to survive an unprecedented time, right? And so I want us not to forget that, because I think the innovation and creativity, you talked about virtual care coming into long-term care in a pretty quick way. We need to use our lessons from that to keep propelling us forward.
And that's the opportunity. You know, we know with the waitlist, the demand, the waitlist in Toronto will never lessen. And we know that Toronto, the demand for services in Toronto is going to have a domino effect on the rest of the system. So I think this, we are at a juncture today where we can no longer take those resources for granted. And we need to step back and think differently about how we actually use them and leverage them. Lucy, I'm going to come back to you and I'm going to say you've experienced the past of long-term care. You are experiencing long-term care as it is today. If you could step back and say, what is the perfect vision or a better destination for what long-term care could look and feel like in the future? What is that destination? How would you describe the ideal long-term care experience from a family perspective?
I think that's coming, thinking of a future, it's going to be a rough road getting there because of the way the big change is in life and everything else. We have to be positive what's going to happen next. And that's what, like, talking to everybody in general and to be positive on this, because it's going to be, it's already hard now. And the next 5 years, the way everything is going to be even worse. Like I say, it's always a light in the end of the tunnel and we are going in the right direction, but it's how we're going to get there, how smooth that road is going to be. I think it's going to be a lot of bumps in a way, but I think if everybody works together, we can achieve a lot.
I love your optimism. Could you share in your thinking through your own personal experience what the light at the end of the tunnel could be?
What I like to see is, number one, will be more staff going in to the homes so that we can provide more and more help to the residents that we have now. I think it's, for me and from my point of view, it's one of the, even all the help that we have, we need more because having different residents coming in now. So, and that's going to be worse in the next 5 years. if we can accomplish having that extra help to deal with the situations and to make even a better home that we are right now, it's just, I think we can do it. Being positive, we can go a long way. And that's, for me, that's always at the end of the tunnel, a light in the tunnel. I use that in my home too. So it's, anything can be done. Being positive, being helpful can be done. I have a goal of 5 years. So
we like goals. And for our listeners, I've had the privilege of touring Kensington with Lucia, and she's got a positive force field around her. And I would actually say, with more people like you, with your sense of optimism and positivity and your passion and empathy, we definitely will get there.
We will. I'm 100% sure.
And to Andrea's point, during the pandemic, we did rally. And what's missing for me right now is this sense of urgency. We've spoken about the silver tsunami for decades, and no jurisdiction is prepared for it. And I've had people in government and others out in the community say, well, it's really quiet right now, Donna. And I'm like, yes, because the waters are receding, because the wave is coming to hit us. But therein lies the opportunity, because if you're anticipating what's coming, then you can react and respond and find your way through. So, Andrea, I think you have a vision. I know Kensington has a vision. So what is that vision as you think about closing those gaps in that ideal world, knowing, to Lucia's point, the next 5 years are going to be really challenging. So how do we rise to that challenge?
I think that, you know, while we work to close some of the gaps that have existed for decades, at Kensington, we really want to shift from intake, quote, people apply to move into long-term care, to outreach, right? Let's really go beyond the walls of an LTC home and connect and build relationship with people who may need LTC services and care down the road, or who may not. And let's help them prepare for that potential option in their life journey. And let's help them live the best life they can outside of the walls of long-term care. And should they decide to move in and join us at Kensington Gardens, then we can help them live the best life within our walls as well. And so I hope over time, and I'm even more optimistic than Lucia this morning, to say, I see long-term care being a choice that people understand and maybe even have some optimism about, as opposed to, oh no, I don't want to go there. I'd love it to be one of the options available to people. Not the last option or the option when things are falling apart and you've tried everything else. Because there is a rich, vibrant life in a long-term care home. I'm so proud of the experiences we co-create with the people who live there and their families. And I don't think that gets enough exposure. People think long-term care is your final stop in your life journey. And it may be for many. However, the experience along the way can be joyful and exciting. And when you see the friendships that form, like Lucia has a whole roster of people she visits when she stops by to chair the family council meeting. You don't get that community and connectedness always in other environments. So, you know, to summarize, Kensington's vision is to not just intake, but reach out. We really are committed to helping people live the best life they can. And you'll note I'm not saying health care in the traditional sense we might think about it, because we meet people at every point in their journey at Kensington. And I really see us continuing to demystify the experience in long-term care so that people go and make the most informed decision they can about where they want to live.
I think that's a perfect note to end on, Andrea. Thank you so much for sharing your vision and your passion and your compassion. Lucia, thank you for your sharing, for your leadership, for all that you do to make lives better and to allow people to live their lives in long-term care, and firmly committed to joining you on your journey, Andrea and Kensington's journey around allowing people to live their best lives. And long-term care should be about living. And let's take that challenge and let's meet it together. So thank you to both of you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, Donna.
This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, StaffStat. StaffStat is a workforce platform purpose-built for healthcare. From long-term care homes to hospitals, StaffStat eliminates the administrative burden of shift management through automation, real-time data, and predictive scheduling. Their platform empowers healthcare organizations to fill shifts faster, streamline internal processes, and improve communication between leadership and frontline teams, so staff can focus on delivering high-quality care. Connect for a discovery call and explore how they can support your team at www.staffstat.ca.